I'm Paul Weegraf, Director of the Delaware Division of the Arts and your host for today. Joining me remotely today is Professor of Trumpet and Interim Director of the School of Music at the University of Delaware, Mark Clodfelter. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks so much for joining me and taking a break from your teaching and running the School of Music at the university. I'm really glad to have you on today to introduce you to our listening audience. Tell us a little bit about your background. I know you, talking prior to the show, you were telling me that you came to the university last year, but I'd like to go back farther. What got you involved in music and trumpet in particular, and a little bit about your training and background?
Well, that goes way back. It's been a minute. When I was really young, I used to listen to my grandmother's stereo, and she had some old records by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass.
I grew up with those as well.
And those records really captured my imagination as a child. And I started playing drums at a really, really young age, and then I also picked up guitar at a very young age. But ultimately, when I got into middle school, I chose trumpet. It's interesting because I was a really short kid, and I'm still fairly short. Didn't grow a whole lot, but I was a really short kid, and I thought my father had played trombone just in middle school and junior high back then, of course. And I thought, well, I'm going to play the trombone. And then I realized that, how long it was, and it would be tough to reach all the positions. And I also
Evan's position is pretty far out there.
Right, it is, and I did the math too. You know, when you're a little guy and you're getting on the school bus, you're trying to get a seat with somebody else, you're carrying a big trombone case. It's not as likely the trumpet case fits nicely underneath the bus seat. Yep. So, I made the economic decision to go the path of Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, right? So I chose trumpet and I never kicked the habit.
I'm curious, was A Taste of Honey one of the albums you had?
It was, and South of the Border and Whipped Cream, all of those.
Yeah.
And I actually still have them. Downstairs I have a listening room. It's just a room dedicated to being a geek and collecting stereo equipment and listening to music. And I've got a fairly good sized vinyl collection. And a couple of the real prizes that I have down there is that I have those original Herb Alpert albums that I first started listening to I was able to get from my grandmother later on. And so that's kind of the genesis of where it all started, really. I think we all are drawn to music because we hear music and we love what we hear, and we want to be a part of, that creative process just at a listening level, right?
Now, when did you decide to pursue music as a career, and what did that trajectory look like?
Well, I knew fairly early on that I wanted to be involved in music. I just didn't know exactly what it was going to be like, right? I think everybody who is playing drums when they're young, they think they're going to grow their hair really long and be a rock star, right? And so it wasn't until I started hearing trumpet players that did the rock star type of playing that I really thought, hey, maybe it's trumpet, right? And so people like Maynard Ferguson and Doc Severinsen, at a certain age when I was in high school, sort of became my heroes, and I would play along with their records and try to emulate what they did. I learned an awful lot just by listening and imitating. And then the opportunity to major in music in undergraduate school came along with a scholarship. I had practiced and worked real hard, and I got very fortunate and was able to go and be a music major. And I majored in music education because I knew that that even though I wanted to have a performance facet to my career, I didn't know what that was going to look like either. And I know that's a tenuous route. And I find meaning in helping people. I wanted to be involved in music in some way. So I thought, if I get my music ed degree, I can also teach, I can also perform. And as it happens, as I finished end of my sophomore year, I went to a summer festival, did a whole lot of work over the summer, came back, took a couple of orchestra auditions that were open in the region, and won my first orchestra position when I was 20. So I went to work at a very early age, and while I was still finishing undergraduate school, and that sort of galvanized my path as far as becoming a performer. From there, I did a graduate degree in performance and continued playing full time for about 10 years, eventually entering also into to collegiate teaching, sort of lateral entry through the path of an adjunct position that grew into a full-time position. And then I came to the fork in the road. And as Yogi Berra says, when you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Take it. Now, so, yeah. I'm curious, your performance career, as I was reading on your bio on the University of Delaware's website, is quite extensive and quite diverse. I mean, from classical orchestral music to, as you mentioned, Doc Severinsen and others. Talk about that range, and do you have a preference, and how does a musician prepare for that range? Because oftentimes we think of a musician just in a specific genre, but you look like you've been all over the map.
Well, I guess you could say that I'm the jack of many trades and the master of none. Maybe that's the idea, but I prefer to think of it as I'm a person who loves to make music happen. And I find value in all music. I have an eclectic array of musical tastes. And because I'm drawn in all those different directions by my ears first, then my study follows. And I think it's very important for any performing artist to develop their craft to the highest possible level so that they're ready to step through the door of opportunity when that door opens. And you don't always know what that door is going to look like. I heard it said once that you don't actually control your career when you're a musician. The person on the other end of the phone controls your career. Mm-hmm. And so the more adequately you can say yes to and perform up to the high standard to a variety of things, the more likely you are to work. I think that if you categorized my career most heavily, I would be, you know, a classical orchestral trumpet player. Nice. But with a very healthy dose of big band and commercial styles and broadways, and also a heavy involvement in chamber music and even a little solo facet as well. So I feel so fortunate to have had that kind of a diverse career, because it keeps you involved, it keeps you engaged, and you know, it keeps the creativity coming.
You're describing what I've heard in the theater world as, and I think it's true in the performing arts in general, that a career in theater or the performing arts in general is a piecemeal career where you're constantly cobbling together gigs. It's really a gig economy career.
Well, it is in some ways. I mean, at the freelance level, it really is.
Yeah.
Of course, when you move into positions where, you know, you're a contract player with an orchestra or, right, you know, got a pit gig on Broadway, things like this, that's not so much. And certainly in academia, that's a different type of job profile. Right. But most careers don't begin in the New York Philharmonic.
Right.
Most careers begin with an understanding of entrepreneurial endeavors and how to market yourself, how to build a studio of 40 private students and play Broadway shows at night and do a couple club dates and maybe a salsa gig and, you know, church gigs on Sunday morning. So you are constantly wearing very many hats. And so it doesn't really pay to pigeonhole yourself until you land that one big job that begins to define who you are in that way.
Are there particular teachers that you've had, mentors or trumpeters that are sort of you look up to, you try to emulate?
Absolutely. The list is long and distinguished. There's the people who were my private teachers, like my one-on-one instructors, mm-hmm, include a wide array of folks. There were a couple different guys when I was in undergrad school. One that when I was in high school, his name was Tim Phillips, who really taught me how to apply the ideas of good systematic practice to the trumpet, and that helped bring my technique along an awful long way. He also introduced me to a lot of material that I should be listening to, because when you're listening to great music, that's how you put that software on the hard drive of your brain so that, mm-hmm, it can back out at some point. And then I had a teacher in undergraduate school named Don Eagle, who played with the North Carolina Symphony and had also had a career in the Army band. And he was tough and demanding and had a very real world expectation of all of his students. And those are the kind of things that help you understand where you stand and where you need to be in order to move forward. Then moving into graduate school, I was able to study with Ray Mace. Ray is the current chair of brass faculty of the Juilliard School and former principal trumpet of the American Brass Quintet. The impact that he had on my career, not just as a trumpet player, but just as a professional in the music world, isn't really measurable. I mean, you know, he was just transformative for the way I thought about what the music business was and the nature of art as it relates to our instrument. And then later on, I spent some time taking some lessons with a gentleman named Jim Thompson, who now teaches trumpet at the Eastman School. At the time, he was principal trumpet of the Atlanta Symphony. And his teaching methods informed my teaching methods. While I was learning from him, I was learning also to teach. And so I've been really, really fortunate to have great instructors at all of these different points in my path. As far as the people that have taught me that never really realized they taught me, it's everybody I've ever listened to.
Yeah.
If you're not paying attention, then you're missing out on the opportunity to learn every time you listen.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge list. Everyone from Maurice André on the piccolo trumpet and Tom Stevens, the way he brought that orchestral sound to his solos, and everybody today, the guys that are breaking ground today, people like Thomas Hooton, who is both a brilliant orchestral musician and solo artist, something that was not always a good combination, right? I mean, sometimes, you know, when I grew up, a lot of people were either or, mm-hmm. but that's not the case anymore. You mm-hmm. find people who are extremely well-rounded and do so at the highest level. So I'm continually looking back at the people that I admired then and looking forward to find new heroes every day, because we never stop growing if we stay curious.
That's right. This is great. I want to shift gears now to what brought you to University of Delaware and what your life there looks like. But let me first remind our listeners that you are tuned into Delaware State of the Arts here on News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV. Joining me today is Mark Clodfelter, the interim director of the School of Music at University of Delaware and professor of trumpet. Mark, you taught several places before you got to University of Delaware. What ultimately brought you here?
Well, it's an interesting path. I was teaching at the University of Kentucky and had gotten to a point there. I'd been there for a decade. And so I had tenure and the rank of full professor. And for those who know the academic route, that usually means a life sentence, right? Once you're there, you're going to be there. And because it represents a type of stability that we all covet and we all enjoy. And it gives us a platform from which to do our research and to explore new teaching methods and this kind of thing. And I thought, well, you know, I'm going to retire from Kentucky. And I was wrong. because the University of North Carolina, Greensboro called, and that's home for me. I'm from that triad area of North Carolina.
Right.
And they made a compelling case for, you know, coming there and building the trumpet studio there. And so I went there and I thought, well, I'm home. I'm going to retire from North Carolina. And again, I was wrong. And at Delaware, you know, it's in the middle of a giant growth phase, and the university is behind the arts in a special way. This isn't something that you see every day. And it was so compelling that I had to come here, right? And so we were super fortunate that wonderful students came from across the country to join us as we moved to the University of Delaware, and the trumpet studio is just going well and fantastic. And I thought, well, I guess this is the thing. I'm going to retire from Delaware as a trumpet teacher. Mm-hmm. And I might. But right now, the road has definitely once again taken a fork. And so as interim director of the school, I'm having the opportunity to work as an advocate for my colleagues,
mm-hmm.
and to hopefully empower them to do the things that I know I appreciate when I have that, so that I can do great things for great students. And so it's a different type of position. It's a different look entirely. It's invigorating. It's exciting. It's a challenge, you know, with COVID conditions.
Yeah.
We're in a constantly changing environment, but we have wonderful students. We have wonderful faculty, and I'm thrilled to be here. So, you know, Delaware is treating me well.
Now, did you come to Delaware just as a professor of trumpet and then became interim director?
That's correct.
Okay. So
I came last year was professor of trumpet and had a wonderful success building the program quickly. And really the students were achieving at a high level right out of the gate. And so I was very thrilled with the way that things were going. Our trajectory was looking nothing but great. And then we actually had a national search, an international search for a director that, of course, when COVID hit, everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
So there ended up being an internal search process. And so here we are.
Now, I understand, too, that you head up, is it the trumpet ensemble, or what's the ensemble that you head up?
I take care of the trumpet ensemble. Myself and my colleague, Dr. Chris Underwood, who is my counterpart in the trumpet studio. Together, we teach the trumpet studio and take care of all of the instruction that's provided for those students. And so, yes, the trumpet ensemble is my ensemble.
We hear a lot about the performing arts and how they've been impacted by COVID. I'm curious, from an instructional perspective, how have you been and your students been impacted by COVID in terms of teaching, class time, ensemble, rehearsal, all that kind of thing?
Right. Well, you know, music is a collaborative discipline. And one of the things that make our students uniquely wonderful is their acumen in the area of interdependent collaboration. They understand how to lean on each other's strengths and to bolster each other's weaknesses to arrive at a product that's greater than the sum of the parts. And COVID threatened to take this away because there was no conventional means through which to do this musical collaboration. Now, fortunately, the trends have been in place, the electronic dissemination of music, collaborative platforms in virtual environments, all of these things now come to bear. And so we've been forced to evolve somewhere between 6 to 10 years and approximately 6 or 7 months. But the students have stepped up to the challenge, the faculty have stepped up to the challenge, and they're making music happen. I say we are masked, but not silenced. And we are finding our ways to do this properly, socially distanced, and also through virtual collaborations. So, you know, we have different vehicles through which we get the music to the world, but the world still needs the music. And, you know, you can see this most particularly now. Yeah, there are a lot of expressions of music that are happening on social media platforms by non-traditionally musical people. Mm-hmm. Like you see choirs of doctors,
mm-hmm.
for instance, yeah. You know, people who normally don't necessarily make music, but they're turning to the arts for comfort, for a sense of community. And so now more than ever, we need these things. And so now we enter into a discussion about what is the new occupational outlook for a musician, and how does the application of these 21st century skills relate to relevance within our discipline? And that naturally leads us in a discussion about the development of curriculum moving forward that points towards what's really out there now, because we live in a different time. This is one of those events that is going to be a marker in our evolution as a discipline.
I was going to say, do you have students that are, I mean, I don't want to sound negative, but sort of second guessing their decisions to major in music? Or, I mean, it sounds like you're taking a very positive approach and sort of thinking about how you take this love of music and this aspiration for a career in music and make it work in a future that is still somewhat unknown.
So we are in a constantly evolving climate, and we are constantly working in transition. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, we always have been. I mean, even the mere nature of our art form is working in transition. It's what's happening between the notes, not the actual notes on the page.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At a microcosmic level. And then all the way, if you zoom all the way out, we already had these trends in the electronic distribution of music that have been going on for quite some time. We've just been forced to accelerate our understanding and our adaptation of them. And I agree with you 100% about looking forward. I think that it's easy to stand on the ground you're on and look at your feet and wish you were somewhere else. But there's really no truth in that now. The truth lies in owning the future. I think we have to be at the tip of the spear. We're in one of those situations where there's not going to simply be getting by. There is thrive or fail. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to thrive. And it's by the choices we make every day to cause relevance and to understand the moving target so that we're working in transition to posture our students for success.
So we've got about a half minute left. So what I'm hearing is that you're still able to teach your students, you're still able to bring them together either in socially distanced ways or virtually, and there's still opportunity for them to practice, to perform, and to express themselves. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think if you look back through history, you're going to see that these sort of societal markers that happen throughout history. Often when you read a history book, you see history as defined through suffering and catastrophes. You very often don't read a chapter about a village having a nice day. But in all of that, there is opportunity and there's adaptation. And you see advancement happen in that. I think it is the Chinese language that the word for crisis also contains in it the word for opportunity.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
There's a duality that exists there that we just have to take the reins and step bravely into it. And I'm proud to say that that's at the University of Delaware School of Music, that's what we're doing.
And on that positive note, Mark Klaufelter, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it.